Hello and welcome to the PCOS Nutritionist Podcast. If we haven't met yet, then I'm Claire. I'm a registered nutritionist and I also hold an honours degree in exercise science. And my role is really to help women with PCOS understand their PCOS and their body better so they can improve their symptoms as much as possible. So today is a very special episode of the podcast in light of COVID-19. So this is the first episode of our new season, but I'm just going to do a short, sharp episode this time, and we're going to be releasing a longer episode this later this week about a different topic. But I've just had so many questions from women about whether PCOS means that we have an impaired immune system, and I just thought that it warranted some discussion about that and also what I'm doing personally to improve my immune system and kind of get through this time, as I think that's also been asked quite a lot and I thought that might be of interest to you. So I'm just going to preface this part by just saying that I am not an immunologist. Okay, so talking about immunity and stuff is, I'm only taking this from a perspective of I know the like underlying mechanisms and stuff that can happen with women with PCOS. But it's then up to you to then take that knowledge and go and talk to with your doctor or with the specialist to look at your risk profile. But it does concern me slightly that there is a lot of information out there about protecting and kind of ring fencing elderly. But then, I mean, in a lot of other countries, I know that the UK this week has been talking about just ring fencing the elderly and then letting, in air quotes, herd immunity do the rest. Where basically they say, right, well, we think that the horse is bolted, we can't really stop it now, so we're just going to let the virus do its thing and on the younger people, the healthy people, and then the rest, everyone else can, well, they'll hopefully be okay, and we'll keep the other, the elderly and stuff away from it. I know that Holland's just said that they're going to do the same thing today, and that concerns me a little bit because I just think that there is potentially so many young people out there who don't know that they're immune compromised and then are susceptible to getting this and having, you know, really bad outcomes. So this is not like a panic stations, but I think that it's just worth you guys being aware of some things that can reduce immunity and therefore what you could do to improve that, or whether you might need to actually self-isolate rather than just practicing social distancing. So of course, you'll know in terms of what is in the media every day around age and stuff like that and your risk profile. But I think what's probably not been broken out yet as well is what can contribute to impaired immunity. So that's what we're going to go through today and how that relates to PCOS. When we take a deeper look at first and foremost, let's just go back a little bit and say there is, in its essence, there is nothing about having high androgens, that's like testosterone, DHAS, anacetonidione, those are the androgen family, and that's really what PCOS is we have, most of us have high levels of those. There's nothing about that, having missing or irregular periods and or, in air quotes, cysts on your ovaries, and they are basically just, or the cysts are, as little eggs that basically haven't matured properly. And there's nothing about that, so those three are the diagnostic criteria but for PCOS. There's nothing about those that reduces your immunity. But when we look deeper at the underlying things going on for many women with PCOS, we find that many of us may have weakened immunity to those. So the first one would be type 2 diabetes. So up to 40% of women with PCOS are type 2 diabetic, and many of those will be undiagnosed. Okay, so that is a much, much greater prevalence to women just without PCOS. So in the normal community, we'd say that about just under 5% of women have type 2 diabetes, whereas in PCOS it's 40%. And that is a research paper from 2012. So it could be a little bit on the low side, given that we're almost a decade on from there and we know that the incidence of both PCOS and type 2 diabetes are increasing. So you only have to read a couple of articles about COVID-19 to know that type 2 diabetes is one of the immune compromised conditions listed for COVID-19. What's less clear is whether those with pre-diabetes, and that's 80% of us with PCOS, are immune compromised as well. So the reason that this is all, you know, connected to compromised immunity is that high blood glucose levels, which is generally the case in type 2 diabetes and can be the case in many women with pre-diabetes as well, is that those high blood glucose levels challenge the immune system. And this leaves our body vulnerable to severe outcomes with infections. So it's possible that those even with unmanaged later stage pre-diabetes may be immune compromised. And this is very much at the moment, I think we don't know. And the reason for this is because we don't have the resources and possibly the time to be testing people who have who are in hospital or even who have died from COVID-19. We aren't testing them to, not as far as I'm aware, going in and doing laboratory testing to see how high their blood glucose was and see if they were actually, you know, pre-diabetic or whether they were. I think at the moment what they're mostly just doing is asking the family and or, you know, the individual themselves before they or while they were, when they were getting treatment, if they did have any other medical conditions or it's on their medical records. So say if they were known to have type 2 diabetes or cardiovascular disease, they're not picking up the ones that were undiagnosed or where there was other conditions. So they would just say, well, like, I don't know, 10% of the people that have died over the age of 70 also had type 2 diabetes. But actually, it could be a lot more than that. So I think that's the thing, is that we just don't know at the moment. For those people that are immune, you know, if they are immune compromised because of high blood glucose. But it's just that is something that we know happens in the immune system, is that when we do have high blood glucose, it does compromise it. To what extent and what extent that might create a make us more vulnerable, we don't know that yet. The second thing that often coincides with PCOS is autoimmune disease. So autoimmune disease is essentially when your immune system has been fighting foreign invaders for such a long time that it's become a little delirious and started attacking your own body. So some autoimmune conditions have been associated with a high prevalence of COVID-19 mortality, but not all. So we know that, in the papers that I've read anyway, they're talking about multiple sclerosis, rheumatoid arthritis, lupus, those autoimmune diseases. But what hasn't been noted is autoimmune thyroid conditions, which is super common in PCOS. So we know that 25% of women with PCOS have also been found to have thyroid antibodies, which is autoimmune thyroiditis. And so at the moment, we just don't know. There isn't anything that's saying, yeah, if you've got autoimmune thyroiditis, you're going to have a greater risk. But given that it's an autoimmune condition, it's probably worth taking a bit more caution as well. I did also receive a couple of messages on Instagram saying, oh, they've found that PCOS is an autoimmune condition. And I would say, no, they haven't. Okay, there is one study that I'm aware of which has found that women with PCOS a lot of them do create antibodies to a tissue in our body. But that is very, very, very far from being labeled an autoimmune condition. Okay, it doesn't mean that it's not going to be later in life. I'm not saying that. But at the moment, there is nowhere near enough evidence to label PCOS as an autoimmune condition. Then the third and final thing which can create lowered immunity, definitely not to the same extent as type 2 diabetes or an autoimmune condition, it's just something worth flagging here that's often in PCOS as well, is nutrient deficiencies. So the two really ones I just wanted to flag here is B12 deficiency and also vitamin D deficiency. So B12 is a nutrient that is essential for the formation, well, it's essential for lots of things in the body, but one of the things it does, it helps us make white blood cells. And white blood cells are our immune system. Okay, you hopefully will remember this from biology, but that's pretty much what our immune system is made up of, is white blood cells. So that's really, really important. And metformin, which is one of the most commonly prescribed drugs for PCOS, and for good reason, it really helps with insulin resistance. But what it does is it actually strips your body of vitamin B12, which is, as I just said, essential for that white blood cell production. So if you don't have enough B12, your body's probably going to struggle to create or make white blood cells. of course, depending on the level of deficiency. So I'd say that it's probably one of those things that it will just prioritize B12 from other things in your body for if you're fighting an infection. It'll say, right, well, you need also need B12 for energy. So we're going to forego that and create these white blood cells because that's obviously the most important thing that we can do at the moment with that B12. So I'd say unless you're severely, severely deficient, it probably won't it won't compromise your immune system as much, but it'll just compromise your body functioning optimally. So it's just definitely not something that you want to be living with for a very long time and something to get onto. Metformin should be prescribed with B12. That's the current recommendations. But it's really interesting. We have a doctor in the PCOS protocol program at the moment coming through as a participant. And she said on our live call this week that she's never heard that recommendation. So I think that that's probably not getting out there just yet to all doctors. So if you haven't been prescribed B12 with your metformin, then please do get on and get a vitamin B12 supplement as well. That's a really good recommendation to make just for general life, not just in terms of immunity. The second vitamin that's also really important for immunity is vitamin D. So up to 85% of women with PCOS have been found to be either deficient or severely deficient with vitamin D. So, and that was a 2015 study, so relatively recent as well. And vitamin D is also critical for our immune system to work properly, and it's the vitamin that we get from the sun. So if you live in the northern hemisphere at the moment, you're just coming out of winter, you won't have had enough vitamin D through there from the sun. So you, especially like, so if you're in the US, if you're above those southern states, so sort of Florida, South California, those kind of states, then there's no way that you'll be able to get enough vitamin D from the sun at the moment. Even in those areas, you might be lucky to. Same thing if you're in the UK and Ireland, you will also not have been able to get enough vitamin D over the last few months. So you really need to be getting that from either fatty fish, I would be saying 4 serves of fatty fish a week, and or a vitamin D supplement. Okay, so again, I don't think that vitamin D deficiency is going to mean that it hasn't been listed as something that's going to make you immune compromised. But again, they're not going into the morgue or into the hospitals and going, right, what makes you guys susceptible to getting either very sick with this or having these symptoms or even dying? And let's look at all these things like your nutrient levels and stuff. That stuff isn't happening. So we can only just assume that we know that these things do have a role to play, and whether they are enough to, you know, to put you at greater risk, I don't know. Frankly, for me, I wouldn't want to be taking, you know, I wouldn't want to be taking the risk for something that I can control quite easily. So for me personally, this is what I am doing to just take those precautions for me. So I am obviously first and foremost following the main guidelines outlined, and I think those are definitely the first things that you should be doing. So that is getting serious about washing your hands, keeping your hands away from your face. And anyone in my protocol group, you'll be laughing at this because you know on the video call this week, I was like, oh my God, I'm going to be like that person that the lady on who was her video was going around the internet. Basically, she was telling people to stop touching their face, and then she licked her finger to change or to like turn the paper over. But that's what I was like when I saw myself on video. I was like, oh my God, I touch my face all the time. So I'm not perfect at that, but it's just one thing to, you know, to keep trying with. Second thing is practicing social distance, and especially obviously in countries where those guidelines are currently in place, or complete isolation, again, where those guidelines are currently in place. Or if I had one of those conditions, type 2 diabetes, autoimmune conditions, those are the kind of conditions that the public health guidelines are saying to self-isolate as well. So check in what your country's guidelines are around that, because it does differ across the world. But that is generally the guidelines. Now, these are the things that are the things that are not being talked about out there and that I'm doing. So first one is eating lower insulin stimulating foods to try and keep my blood sugar down. So what is lower insulin stimulating foods? This can differ for different people, but generally it's lots of like vegetables that grow above the ground. So those are like non-starchy vegetables, got lots of fiber, got lots of water in them, and they're generally not going to, that, well, they are not going to spike your insulin. So those are great. I'm also eating proteins, meat, eggs, fish, etc. And I'm not stockpiling on highly processed, highly manufactured foods is probably the big thing as well. I know that's very tempting, especially when you're thinking, okay, we're going to be stuck inside. Let's stock up on crisps and crackers and chips and biscuits and those kind of snacks, because they are shelf stable. We don't know how long we're going to be here for. And also they're quite tasty. But those are the things I'm definitely not stocking up on. So that would be the first thing. Second thing is I'm getting as much sleep as I can, especially the hours before 12 a.m. So we know from so much research that that sleep impairs our immune system. And I think you only have to think back yourself, or I do anyway, to when I get sick is when I'm tired. So I know that if I've had a run of late nights, that will be when I get sick, right? And one thing I can do to stop myself getting more sick is actually just going to bed and sleeping for most of the day. Again, because when we sleep, our body can actually, our nervous system goes into our rest and digest, and that's the stage where our immune system can actually do most of the work that it does. Whereas when it's when we're in our sympathetic nervous system, that's kind of our fight and flight, it can't do the work that it can do in terms of the repairing and placing. That can only be done when we're asleep. So we're in that parasympathetic nervous system. So trying to get as much sleep as I can is another thing that I'm trying to do. And the great thing about being in social distancing is that you don't have as many things on in the evening. There's not the, you know, I don't know about you, but shows I had booked in, the comedy events and the dinners out and the travel have all been cancelled. So there's no excuses not to be able to get to bed. I think the hard thing is getting ourselves off social media and getting ourselves off the news websites. I found that I've been refreshing news sites way more than what I would normally. And not only does this lead to a bit of anxiety, but it also is something that I'm trying to stop myself from doing, especially at night when it's going to impair my sleep. Remembering that blue light is one of the things that does impair us in sleep. So I'm trying to turn off devices by 8 p.m. and read a good book. And yeah, really get into some of the things that I haven't been able to do for many years, like reading a book, or I don't know, I've like hemmed 2 shirts and sewn on a few buttons of pants that have been sitting there for ages that I haven't got around to. So using the time for that instead of devices and things like that. Then the next thing I'm doing is getting moderate exercise in every day. And moderate exercise for me, I would count that as about 20 to 25 minutes of strength training, maybe a little bit of high intensity, and then also when I can, as much like walking in steps as possible. So for many of you that are in complete lockdown, that won't be possible for you, but what you can do is get a 20 to 25 minute workout in if you can. So to help you with that, we've actually launched a app for you, which is fab, with home-based workouts that you can do with any equipment, and for those of you that are used to going to the gym and you're really missing that, if you have got a dumbbell or a kettlebell at home, you can also incorporate that in there. So the idea is that this can work for any fitness level. They've got modifications for every exercise, so you might log in and the day is like 20 minutes where you set the timer on your phone or have all the instructions, set your timer on the phone for 40 seconds of work and 20 seconds of rest, and then it'll have 10 exercises, and we go through those twice. So the 10 exercises might be lunges or squat presses or tricep dips off the couch. Okay, so for those of you that you haven't been doing an exercise and this is your first foray into exercise for a while, the 40 seconds might be way too much, but you can just set that down back down to say 30 seconds of work or 20 seconds of work. So anyone can do these. And if your exercise levels are higher, your fitness levels are higher, you can go and add like a kettlebell to your squat presses. Or if you don't have any equipment at home, you can fill up a water bottle or a milk bottle and use that as your weight, or involve your kids or your dog into it, whatever you want to do. So that there is a link to that in on my Instagram, on the show notes for this. It's also in our Facebook group. And if you also, we've got a Facebook group for this as well that we've just, it's just like a pop-up 1 month Facebook group to help get us through this time, this crazy time. And it's called PCOS Nation. So if you search for that on Facebook, you'll find us there. And then there's a link to the download the app once you're in there as well. So come and join us there. As I said, it's just going to be a free like month-long pop-up of to get us all energized and into exercise and give us something positive to focus on in this crazy, overwhelming, scary time. So that's what I'm doing as well. I'm also getting out and getting into the sunshine. So social distance, if you're socially in the country that's practicing social distance, not complete lockdown, then it doesn't mean that you have to stay indoors. You can get out and about, and you know, so long as you're practicing that distance. In New Zealand, the guidelines are 2 meters away for other people. They might be different, slightly different elsewhere, but that is the case. So for me, it means I can go for a walk down the beach. I can go for a mountain bike. I can go for a walk around the block. And I can still get out into the sunshine, therefore hopefully getting my vitamin D. And if I'm not getting that, then I'm going to be eating 4 serves of fatty fish a week to increase my vitamin D levels. And if I can't do that, then I'm going to be taking a supplement as well for vitamin D. So it's about 400 to 800 international units of vitamin D a day is the recommended daily allowance for vitamin D. So you need to be making sure you're getting at least that. Next thing is, if I was on metformin, I would also be taking a vitamin B12 supplement. As I mentioned before, vitamin B12 is essential for white blood cell production, and metformin is known to strip that from your body. So it's not a new recommendation just for immunity. This is a standard guideline for anyone taking metformin. And then the last thing is definitely connecting with loved ones in these times, virtually over the phone, WhatsApp, Facebook, video calls, whatever that is. If that's for you, is coming and joining our PCOS Nation Facebook group, where it's literally just, we're just trying to connect over a simple thing, getting some exercise in. There's no diet chat, there's no weight loss, there's nothing like that. It's just a group of great girls getting and getting together and bonding over this shared kind of thing that we're going through. So if that's what you need, come and join us there. And a really good thing to do if you're really struggling to, if you're never really able to get into exercise, or especially now, a really good tip is to just set your goal of doing 5 minutes for the first few weeks, right? It's just that there's no expectation. Set the timer on your phone for 5 minutes, jump into our exercise app and just start following along the exercises there. And then when the timer goes off, you're done. This takes away any barrier to exercise that you can think of. Like when you think, oh God, I don't have time. It's like, really? Do I not have time for 5 minutes? And then you have to question yourself. It's like, could you find 5 minutes today somewhere? It's like, yeah, okay, I could. It's like, cool. Well, great. Because you don't have to get changed. Think about it. 5 minutes. You're not really going to build up a sweat. You don't have to get changed. You could do this in your pajamas, in your work clothes, if you're still going out to work. You could do this while you're like, just before you get in the shower. Whatever it is, you don't have to get changed to do this. You don't have to get into activewear. You just literally turn on some good music, open the app, set your phone for 5 minutes and just do it. Okay. And then once you've done that 5 minutes, that's it. That's it. You don't have to pressure yourself or have any expectation about making that longer. Just set yourself that one goal. The reason that this, I love this so much, is because A, you can't say, no, I don't have time, or you can't say, no, there is, I'm not going to be able to do it today, because everybody can find 5 minutes. The second thing is because it just means that there is very, the barrier to entry is so low that you, everyone can do it. So I love that. And I, with anyone, I really encourage you to use that 5 minute rule and keep using it. And maybe after a few weeks, you might go, oh, that felt pretty good. Could I do that again? And yeah, okay, I think I could do that again. And then you build up to, maybe you build up to 10 minutes, or maybe you don't, maybe you just stick at 5 minutes. And that's what you need at the moment to help with your mental clarity in the days that where you're not going into work, you're not leaving your home. And I think that's the most important thing. I mean, I know I worked from home when I first started my business. We didn't have an office, and I found it so hard. I found it so socially isolating. I found it really demotivating. And one thing that really helped was getting up in the morning and just doing a little bit of movement to start my day. And I know when I did that, then I was motivated to get into my work. I was way more productive. I was way happier. And also either that, or at the end of the day, it was my way of switching off. It was my way of going, actually, no, this is the end of the day now. And I could, you know, finish work, close my laptop, do my exercise, and then that was the day done. So I really encourage you guys that are like at home at the moment to use this little bit of exercise, even if it is just 5 minutes, to help you through this time, because I can't tell you how amazing it is just for that mental well-being through this like isolation. So I hope that helps. As I said, all of the links to that will be in the show notes, but if you want to just search us for our pop-up Facebook group on Facebook, it's PCOS Nation. So that's just PCOS Nation. I really hope to see you there, and I hope you're well. Sending you massive virtual hugs and love from here. I know it's a tough and scary time, and I hope that this has helped just give you a bit of an idea about things that you can do to keep well. And for those of you that might just need to take a little bit of extra caution if you do know that you have one of those conditions. All my best, and we'll see you in a couple of days' time with a big podcast, which will be the real kickoff of our season. And it's all about a really cool experiment Sophia, one of my staff members, and I did about testing our blood glucose levels and just looking at the difference in what our blood glucose did after we'd eaten the same foods. We had the same thing for a week, and then we tested our blood sugar just to show that, you know, it's quite different for someone who has no insulin resistance, which is me, compared to someone who doesn't have any insulin resistance, which is Sophia. So I hope that you enjoy that. See you in a couple of days. Bye for now. Now stand by for our disclaimer. The information contained in this podcast has been prepared for the purpose of providing information, including about the PCOS Nutritionist products and services, and is designed to support clients' overall wellness. It is not intended to provide medical advice or designed to rectify, treat, or cure any specific medical conditions or diseases. Nothing stated or shared in our podcast is intended to be and must not be taken to be medical advice. Please seek the advice of professionals as appropriate regarding the evaluation of any specific information, opinion, advice, or content contained in our podcast.